Hello and welcome to Living Downstream. I'm Julie Lowe, the Environmental and Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and one of the hosts of Living Downstream. Our topic today explores the great mystery of communicating effectively among diverse people. It's so strange when diverse communities with similar objectives have difficulty talking together. As a community, we can all agree we want healthy children and happy children, a nourishing and beautiful environment, and opportunities for everybody to achieve their both their personal and professional objectives. But when people of different backgrounds, life experiences, and ages, such as educational achievements, health experiences, family events, religious and relationship experiences, and personal goals find themselves at odds, communication is often the problem. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Dr. Jean Erickson Walker, a communications and career coach, an educator, and a public speaker. She's had a fascinating life, really around the world, experiencing different communities and seeing the same issue with all of them. Welcome, Jean. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Thank you, Julie. I'm delighted to be with you. You know, I think the best thing that ever happened to me was being born to the parents I was born to on a little ranch in the Little Badlands of North Dakota. I can't think of a better place to grow up. Something about ranch life means that everybody there, everyone on that ranch, regardless of age or capabilities, is important. Everyone needs to be involved in every day. So you grow up with a sense of independence and interdependence that is really quite unusual. One of the things that came up early in my life was the fact that my brother, who was 12 years older than I was, went off to college. I was only 5 years old, and I decided that, well, I thought I would just kind of skip all the rest of the years and go right to college with Howard. Because in our family, education was a primary objective. Both of my parents and their families homesteaded. But above all was the idea of helping others, taking care of your neighbors, being kind to each other, and certainly education. So I went off to college where I met my husband, George. We married, and I followed his career moves. He was first in the Navy and then with the Bell Telephone Company for 27 years. We have three children who grew up in Colorado, Montana, and even in Oregon, where we moved in 1989. We spent almost 30 years there before moving back to our home on Swan Lake in Montana in 2018. So throughout all of this constant moving, which my son-in-law refers to as the patchwork quilt of my life, I've owned a gourmet restaurant, an art gallery. I've taught English in three colleges. I've been director of enrollment management at a college and at a high school. I've been involved in international peace through the Friendship Force, leading groups of people in exchanges to Russia, India, Germany, Israel, Egypt, Korea, and so forth. I've traveled to 49 countries. And when I came back to Oregon in 1989, I think we moved to Oregon. First of all, I did what I always did. When we moved so often with his work, I had to figure out a career. So it always went back to teaching, which was my original career. I graduated with my original bachelor degree in secondary education in vocal music and English. When I left for college, the other ranchers teased my father and said, "Why would you waste all that money on a girl going to college?" And my father's response was always, "It's the best insurance policy I can ever give her." Little did he know that I would go on and get my master's degree and eventually, in my late 50s, my doctorate. So education has been important to me. I've traveled in 49 countries. Last year, I spent 10 weeks by myself in Sevilla, Spain, where I spoke really no Spanish, and the people there really spoke no English. But you know what? People are people everywhere. Facial expressions are so important, and we became friends. So it's all about people caring about people, which is basis of good communication.
Thank you. That's fascinating. You know, I recently moved to this area, to the Umpqua Watershed area, and it's a fascinating area. It's nature. It's everything I've always loved. But it's what strikes me is this: with communities around the world, it's very diverse. But there's one thing we have in common, and that's the watershed we all love. We depend on it. Whether you're a hunter, a forester, a trapper, a member of the tribal communities, an environmentalist, a religious leader, I'm an outdoor enthusiast, immigrants, artists. We have so many artists and retirees. We have veterans, farmers, agriculture workers, so many vineyards around here, teachers, lawyers, parents. We're a community just like everybody else. And we all love the beauty of our watershed. And we all depend on the clean air and water. You know, that's the thing about clean air and water. They don't choose communities. You know, we kind of choose them. And then we kind of try to direct that. But you know what? Air goes where air goes. And water goes where water goes. It doesn't walk around different communities. It doesn't avoid some and go into others. So this is one thing that we all have in common, and we all love it. No matter how you enjoy the Umpqua watershed, it's something that we all depend on, we all love with every core of our being. So knowing that we share such a profound thing in common, why is communication so difficult? We know what we want. We know what we mean when we're talking, and we know what we want to say. So why isn't it simpler? Why isn't anyone understanding me when I know what I want to say and you should know what I want to say because it's super important? So why is it so hard for us to communicate with each other?
Oh, Julie, that's the great mystery. Diversity? This is a term we hear a lot of these days, as if the concept had just been discovered. When I look back at my life, I have been so blessed to have the variety and fascination, and yes, sometimes the challenges and complexity of diversity throughout my life. It's been a wonderful opportunity to learn and grow, to see the differences in people and places and cultures that make our world so interesting. But along with Vive la Différence comes learning to work and live, to study and respect these differences, while often learning more about our own beliefs from having to explain and, quite frankly, even defend them. Communication, open and honest, without attacking the other person, much less their beliefs, is the key. You know, in my work as a counselor and coach, in people's lives, mostly in their careers, but, you know, our careers slop over into all parts of our lives. So it really is in all aspects. The major reason people give for problems in their relationships, that's personal, marriages, families, friends, neighbors, people you work with, bosses, customers, the first thing they say is, there is no communication. There's no such thing as no communication. There's always communication. The question is whether it's good or bad communication, if it's honest and real, authentic. How real, how authentic, how honest is your everyday communication? That's kind of a startling question when you think about it. How often do you say something to be kind to the other person, to avoid conflict, to get around something that is uncomfortable, to make someone else feel better? You know, and we think, well, isn't that a good thing? Isn't it kind of me to do so? No, because you're not being honest. You don't have to be unkind to be honest. How do you like my new hairdo? Well, I think it's interesting that you have a new style. That must be fun for you. Rather than saying, oh, I think it's beautiful, when you really think it's ugly, right? So be honest. It's hard. It's hard work. But you can think of ways to say things without being hurtful. So we think about, How honest are we in our everyday? Because the basis of every relationship, the obvious part of relationship is communication, but the unobvious is trust. And when you are not honest and sincere, when you are not communicating directly, you lose trust. It's contrived. Sometimes you communicate to create your own image or uphold an image you'd like to have or perception you think will be effective to make or keep a friend, give an advantage in the relationship, create an image or perception. You know, the truth of the matter, Julie, is that 87% of communication is not the words we speak. That's kind of a rude awakening. In my career, I've done a lot of public speaking, both nationally and internationally. And it's always, I'm completely paranoid for 2 months in advance of a major speech. And I work so hard on it. And I know that the words I've created are just, you know, should be go down in the ages of time, right? They're just so magnificent. I practice and I practice and I practice. Then I get there. I walk up to the stage. I turn around and there are people I love people. I'm fascinated with people. So all the work I've done goes astride, and I realize that the fact of the matter is people will remember me and how I made them feel about themselves. All my brilliant words go out the door. So it's my facial expression, my tone of voice, my body language, all things that I have no experience with myself. Let's look at that, my facial expression. I see my face for 10 minutes every morning, and it's always a bad hair day. So you can imagine my facial expression. I don't see my body language. I don't see myself walking. I'm told I have a very strong walk. So I have to remind myself, slow down, keep my hands at my sides, and I can be somewhat overwhelming. So I have to be, let people catch up with me, and I have to be listening, and I have to be caring about them, not being excited about what I'm doing. And this is my tone of voice. I've done a lot of public speaking, and every time I hear a recording of it, I'm so surprised. I don't recognize that voice. So be aware that 87% of communication is something you have no experience with yourself.
That's fascinating to think of that.
It's kind of a rude awakening, isn't it? Because, and what are your words? You know, something I've read long ago, and I get such a kick out of it. There are always six interpretations of what we say. There's what I said, the actual words, those words that I wrote over 2 months, right? What I thought I said, and what I meant to say. There's what you heard, what you thought you heard, and what you wanted to hear. Scientists tell us that the human brain only requires 15% of its power to understand language. That means 85% is running around loose. You have no idea where it's going, right? And as a result, you don't know what's happening with what you meant to say. You know, I can remember my father telling me as a child more than once, Jean, the good Lord gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. It's something for all of us to remember. So communication and diversity, we are so diverse. We are so complex as people. We have so many things in our lives that have brought us to where we are today. The person who understands themselves is more likely to understand others. And understanding ourselves, being who we were meant to be, who we really are, is a lifelong journey.
But that's a tricky one. I always thought I understood myself. 5 years ago, I thought I understood myself. I was really proud that I knew who I was, and I really know what makes me tick. 5 years later, I'm sitting here going, who was that and what happened? I don't know if I'm different, but I have a whole different concept of myself. So that kind of scares me. How do I know when I really got me and I understand who I am? Or do I just remain open?
I do think that there's a sense in, you know, and I just have to refer back again to a very special time in my life, which was the 9 to 10 weeks I spent in Sevilla last year, basically on almost a retreat. It wasn't meant to be. I was fascinated. I've always been fascinated with travel and cultures. But the fact of the matter is, taking away the blessing of language, which is sometimes a curse, but when we take that away and we're really interacting with people as people, one of the strange, and I hate to even say it as a benefit because of how awful COVID was for everyone, but do you know what? I've never been a detail person. I don't notice details. And yet during that period of time, I didn't have people's mouths, their smiles. Mm-hmm. And I've started noticing eyes, and eyes smile. And I've become so conscious of that. I'm absolutely fascinated. You notice in your daily comings and goings, wherever you are, you notice the artificial communication of people who smile with their mouths, but they're not smiling with their eyes. They're not smiling with their souls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A little thing with me is when I go to church and I go to communion and I am given the bread and wine, I want that person to smile. I want that person to look in my eyes. It isn't just a task they're doing. And what a difference it makes. When I go into a store and a clerk waits on me at the grocery store and never looks in my eyes, it is fascinating to me. So really, communication if nothing else, remember this. To communicate well, we must truly care about other people. It's not about me winning some sort of contest. I won, you lose. Oh, bummer, you won this time. I didn't say the cleverest, smartest thing. You didn't walk away defeated. How much is about recognizing and respecting we are each unique and valuing what each of us brings to this world? I have this fantasy analogy that the world that I love, that the world is a big giant puzzle. And each person is a puzzle piece, a very intricate, complicated puzzle piece. But if each of us becomes who we are meant to be, is the best we can be. When we do something, do it the very best. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. If we all did that, the world would be a perfect puzzle, all put together with perfect pieces. And we'd have a perfect world. Okay, it's a fantasy, but it's also a goal for each of us. It's all about finding our puzzle piece, and I do believe it's a lifelong journey. I learned so much about myself as I wandered the streets of Seville by myself. And you know, there is a universal language. It's, guess what? 87% of communication. It's our body language, our facial expression, our tone of voice. So I didn't need to speak Spanish. They didn't need to speak English. So we are complex. And one of the challenges we have, I believe, in the United States is that we are a competitive culture. And there are all sorts of reasons for that, I believe. But as a result, we are always, we know somehow from the time, you know, what, we're 3 years old, tiny. We know that we're not perfect and we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be perfect. Now, there's a perfect way to be a three-year-old. There's a perfect way to be a boy, a girl, a mother, a father, a teacher, an engineer. Doesn't matter what it is. There's a perfect way. We don't have any place where we can find the definition of it. But we know there is, and we know we didn't make it. That's a tough thing to deal with, and it's unique to the United States. So it's a way of letting people be who they are, celebrating the differences, learning, being curious. Tell me about that. I think that's fascinating. When did you first begin to believe that? Do you remember the circumstances? What is the most important thing to you in this particular situation? People get into situations all the time where they are having to make decisions or come together as a group in some way to solve some sort of problem or figure out a way to do things. And what they typically do, Julie, and this is an important point, what they typically do is they start with the things they disagree upon. That's interesting. So you're in a committee, you're in a small group, you're even in your home with friends, and you say, well, you know, what I think is this. Well, I think is this. Well, why do you think this? And we already put people on the defensive. When you are having a conversation about an issue, start and make a list of the things upon which you can agree. You did that, Julie, when you started this session. You talked about what do we all want? We want what? Good lives for our children. We all want clean water. Start with that. Okay, you can say, well, why do I have to go to all that trouble? We all know that. You know what? We don't know it. It's out there. But to actually put it on the whiteboard, put it up so everyone can see it, it actually completely brings people together. So start with what we can agree on. Then the next step is list the unknowables. What are the unknowables? That there is no way for us to know, that only time will tell. You know, that it isn't based on science, it isn't based on anything else. This is an unknowable. We do not know and won't know for a period of years what will happen with this watershed, with the drainage. So what do we not know? So start with what we can agree upon. Number two, start with, then go to the unknowables. And three, define options and prioritize them. So each person, we prioritize what is the most important. Is clean air? Is clean water? What are the most important things? And then go into anything you can provide of data. And so you have the hardcore facts. You'll be surprised at the end of that, how often your differences don't really seem that important. So it brings things into priorities.
Oh, I love that. I love that. For our guests just tuning in, this is Living Downstream on 99.7 KQUA. I'm your host, Julie Lowe, and we're speaking with Dr. Jean Erickson-Walker, a communication and career coach, an educator, and a public speaker. We're talking about the difficult issue of communication and with diverse communities of so many common interests. Why is communication such a difficult thing? Jean, while you're talking, I kept thinking the word time, 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 the word time. It seems to me Americans have an issue with time. There's never enough. We're in a hurry. I know some of the Southern cultures have siestas and whatnot. I know other cultures only have a 4-day work week. I know other cultures are generous with their time. They're not in a hurry to get everywhere. I get a lot of criticizing from people when I'm moving through a grocery store. I'm moving fast. I don't have time. I have to get what I have to get, and I have to get out. When I go get my sandwich at lunch, I need my sandwich. I don't need to know how the clerk is feeling. I really don't, but I should. But I'm in a hurry. I need to get back. Americans seem to have an over, I don't know how to say it, or importance on time. So when you say, think about what the other person's feeling, think about what the other person, who has the time? And is that an American thing? And is that something we need to stop and think about?
Absolutely. It's huge. And really, really, is each one of us all that important that the world is going to stop if we don't get whatever it is we thought we needed to get done, done? But I have to get back in everything to sincerity, to authenticity, to honesty. So one of my pet peeves is when I pull in, I'm in a rush, you know, so I can't go in and sit down and have a pleasant cup of coffee. I have to go to the drive-up, right? Have to do that, and it has to be quick. And I want it right now, and it better be done accurately, right? And I'm tapping my foot because I have things to do and places to be and people to see, and I'm so important, right?
And I was right behind you in the car.
Yes, right.
I was the next car behind you.
You were probably beeping.
Probably.
Okay. But one of my pet peeves is when the clerk or the whomever I'm dealing with says, "And how are you today?" I have no patience with that kind of inanity. Don't ask how someone is unless you genuinely care and genuinely intend to help in whatever way you possibly can if they tell you. I'm going to tell you a sad sort of story, Julie. My husband and my son died within 9 months of each other. It was a really difficult time. And I stopped at Starbucks drive-up as I was going in to make funeral arrangements for my son, the second death. And the clerk said, "Are you going to do something fun today?" Now, you don't have any idea what that person's life is. You don't have any idea how presumptuous to say, "How are you?" We think it's a nice thing. And some consultant way back when taught all clerks to say that. And so we all say it. When you see a friend, you give them a hug and you say, "How are you?" You mean it. You mean it. That's good. You can always honestly and sincerely say, "I hope you have a good day." That's real. But how dare you say, "Are you doing something fun today? Are you having a good day? How are you?" Let's think about the words we say and the meaning behind them. Let's care about the other person. Let's realize that, no, there isn't anything I can give my condolences, but I can't really help that person that I'm coming through. So let's judge the relationship by what is appropriate to the situation. Always say, I hope you have a good day. That's wonderful. So think about what we're saying. One of the problems we have in this rushing about of ourselves is this idea that quantity is more important than quality. I got this much done. You know, I think so many of us have some sort of a, you know, automatic, you know, checkmark list, and I have to accomplish this. Was it really, how much on that was really, really mattered?
I do that every day. I justify to my family every day what I accomplished. I give them my checklist. I did this, this, and the other day. How about that? And you know what? They're not proud of me. Do you know how they see it? They see it as an accusation about what did you do? Because look what I did. So I didn't mean it that way. I was actually bragging, like, look how good I was today. They, and what you were saying about communication, they see it, they hear it wrong. They hear it as an accusation of what they didn't do.
You know what? We're getting back to our competition again. There's a perfect way. You're a mom, you're a wife, you're a teacher, you know, you're environmentalist. And so all of those roles are on top of your head. And so you have to accomplish something in everyone to justify, in every aspect, in order to justify your existence.
Right.
My daughter has a wise thing she says to me sometimes, and she says, does it really matter? That has been so helpful to me, because I am a person. I think life is fascinating and exciting, and I want to do everything, see everything. And so it's very easy for me to get caught up in doing, taking on more than is really reasonable, rather than stopping and smelling the roses. I have another daughter who said, I used to say to her when she was growing up, stop and smell the roses. And she would say to me, I don't have time to find the roses. Do you see how, wait a minute, when all is said and done, you know, there's nothing I enjoy, and I know this sounds a little peculiar, but I enjoy my time by myself wandering. Because when I wander by myself, I notice leaves. I notice the shape of leaves. When I was a small child, I had glasses by the time I was six. And in our ranch house, we had no electricity and no plumbing until I was in junior high. And so I used to go up to my little tiny room, teeny, teeny, teeny room up in the attic area at night with a flashlight. I was scared. Oh, I just hated it up there. And I would get up there and I would lose my glasses. So my mother bought a little tiny table beside my bed. And she said, always put your glasses there so you can find them. You'll know where they are. Put things where you know there'll be. It's wonderful. Just such power. So I had never seen leaves, actually leaves on trees. We're looking at a tree across the way. I'd never seen leaves until I was 21 and got contact lenses. Because glasses, I couldn't see that detail. So for me to stop and actually look at a rose or any flower or a rock, the shape of a rock, how fascinating. You don't tend to do that when you're with people because you're talking, you're having a social experience. So take time by yourself. Take time to just experience. And that's part of it. But, you know, one of the big handicaps, you know, the rushing, the saying things that are trite, the how are you, and I don't really, really care. And if I really, really did care, there was nothing I could do about it. I have to move on because Julie's behind me beeping the horn at the Starbucks, right? So I have to, I mean, that person tells me something tragic in their lives, and I just say, oh gosh, that's really tough. Oh, I have to go because somebody's behind me beeping. Is that how you run your life? Is that how a person, how many of us run our lives that way? You know, it's craziness. So take time. So one of the things that handicaps to good communication And this is a big situation that we all do, and we do it without realizing, is prejudging, generalizing, assigning types. You walk down the street, Julie, and you see somebody coming to you, towards you. You don't know that person. You probably will never know that person. I mean, it's just a human being. But your mind just goes click, 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 and it categorizes that person. That person, gender, age, their attire tells you all sorts of generalizations and classifications. Their race, their confidence, how they walk. So what is their role? Their hair, their makeup, their glasses, or not glasses. What does it mean when somebody has glasses? Well, somebody has glasses, they're an intellect, right? You know, I mean, because they must read a lot. I mean, these silly little classifications. Who are they with? Who are they with? I can remember an instance when I was driving in Portland. I stopped at a street corner, and I saw this elderly woman, and she was having difficulty walking. She had a cane, walking very slow, and traffic was stopped as she tried to walk across the street. And a young teenage boy came running toward her and took her arm and helped her cross the street. That moment I have never forgotten, and it's probably 30 years ago. But what a beautiful... Now, someone else coming at that point would have seen a young man helping, obviously, his grandmother, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was a stranger. This was an act of human kindness. But Julie, you know better than that. Teenagers aren't kind. They aren't thoughtful. They don't respect elders. They don't do random acts of kindness. Wrong. Wrong. So we generalize their walking style, their speed. Okay, she is not competent and capable. May not even understand you, Julie, when you talk with her, this elderly woman, because look at how she's walking. I have a neighbor who's 91 years old. He has all kinds of health issues, and his mind is as sharp as it was 30 years ago. So, you know, the sense of purpose, that person is strolling. All those people who saw me, you know, did not see me or did see me in Sevilla, I'm just wandering. Sense of purpose, just being fascinated by everything I saw. So obviously I don't have any purpose in life, right? Because I'm not going somewhere fast to do something obviously terribly important. And yet I was doing, those 10 weeks were some of the most important of my life. Eye contact. So prejudging and generalizing, it's a real, real problem. We are so divided in this country according to classifications, assigning, generalizing, prejudging. I don't recall the sense of fear in this country, except back in the days in the 1950s, the Goldwater days, the McCarthyism days, the John Birch days. This is eerily similar to that, where friends and families and neighbors were so torn apart and so in fear of each other. So, you know, it's a bad, you know, one of the things I think is to realize that people are individuals, they are complex and they are fascinating. And to ask them, you're not going to change anybody else's mind, because when people are afraid, all of their defenses are up. So they're not hearing anything. And people right now are very afraid. So when you know, with the watershed and with all of the issues you're dealing with on a daily basis, this is the time to look for ways that we can agree. What can we agree on? And the things you talked about at the beginning of the session are things we all believe in, we all agree on. And so how do we bond, and how do we stop judging? This is the first time since those 1950s where people categorized each other according to their political beliefs, and then went on and said, that person is this, thus is not a good person. Actually put those kinds of judgments on people. My 91-year-old neighbor, sometimes I almost wish he weren't as smart as he is, because we have totally different viewpoints on almost everything. But I have learned so much from him. And I value his friendship. He is one of the kindest people I have ever known. And if I ever had an emergency, I'd want to call Bob. And yet, categorically, we don't agree on any of the political issues of the day. So who is this person really? Get to know them as a human being. What do they learn about their childhood? Learn about their childhood. We think that we move past that and, you know, we rose above it. Our childhood is always with us. Each one of us is always forever 5 years old inside. And we have the same hurts, the same joys, and the same insecurities. I don't care what our titles are or what we've done or done not done in our lives. That real person, that five-year-old, is still there. Get to know the five-year-old in the people that you interact with.
That's fascinating. You know, some people might say this judging people, that's nature. That's nature. You know, the wolf out there in the prairies, a little prairie dog, whatever, they got to make an instant judgment about, is this a danger or not? I have four dogs. They will see the same flickering light. One dog will think that means food's coming. One dog will mean, oh, who knows? Let's go see what that is. One dog will go crazy, scared to death. Same flickering light. We all have to make instant judgments for our own safety, people would say.
The thing is, if we see another person as a human being and not a category, it changes completely. I've had these little flickers of hope and positiveness in just these last two or three months. I'm actually seeing people not at the grocery store. People are hassled there, but at the post office, I'm actually seeing people smile and say good morning. You know, one of the things is this time pressure you talked about. We're all in a rush. So when you get into a conversation that gets to feeling a little pressured, step back and just say, you know, this is an interesting discussion, but I'd like to take time to really think about it. Can we get back together? Do we have to decide now? Can we get back to later? You know, suggest taking time to think about what you really, really believe and are willing to stand by. What are the priorities really? So often those difficult conversations get into minute details that are irrelevant, and they take on huge, huge proportions. So stepping back, you know, one of the worst things is this rush again and this competitiveness. I have to win. I will somehow be less if I don't win. Somehow I will be less. I'm very sensitive to people who are what I call playing roles, playing games. I don't have time to play games. So some people are so concerned about their image, so concerned about how am I looking in this. Every conversation is not a stage. We don't have any podiums here. You know, there isn't a vast audience and TV audience that's going to go out throughout the world and determine by polls the next day who won that argument. You know, a simple way that the kids say, get over yourself. you know, I mean, are you really that critical? So stopping and thinking about that. Over talking, and some people, that's their game plan. But it's also with some people, it's a competitive. I'm just going to talk so much nobody else. You know, I mean, people are just going to give up because they're tired. So I will win because I'm loudest. And I talk much.
Yeah. I'm very much at fault at that. I blame it on enthusiasm, however. I'm so excited to share the really cool thing that just popped into my mind that you need to stop right away because it's going to be really cool and you'll be amazed. But I see myself. I've been catching myself more and more. I need to stop. I need to figure out why I am in the moment. Am I in the moment to talk to myself? Because really, that's what I'm doing at that moment. I'm spouting out my really cool idea. I could go in my room and tell myself that. So I'm really trying to catch myself on that. That's right. I'm really trying to catch myself. You're exactly right.
Let me give you an example. Right now, I'm working with a manufacturing company as an executive coach. So I have five clients. I have the CEO, who's 61. And he is 6'2". I have the director of marketing, who, if you can imagine, is 6'7". Now, this is a marketing salesperson, so you know he talks a lot. And he talks very enthusiastically, right? And very forcefully and quite cleverly, if you want to know the real truth. The CEO is an engineer, thoughtful, pedantic, very authoritarian, right? Okay, then you have the manager, the engineering manager, that is 28 years old. Astonishing to be at that level. This is a young man that, when I started working with him about 6 months ago, I was aware of him there. But when he became manager, then I started working with him, and I thought, oh, he is an authority on all subjects. There is nothing he doesn't know. He talks all the time, and he's very forceful, and he's just, I'm just bored already. I have come to be so impressed with him and to enjoy working with him so much. This young man is so conceptual. He sees things that the rest don't see. So we have in this group of people, we also have, the person who is 6'2", the CEO, the marketing sales who is 6'7", another engineer who is 6'3". We have another person who is well over 6 foot, I don't know how tall, who is the bookkeeper. And then we have my engineering manager who is 5'6". And he is also, the others are all in their 40s, and except for the CEO who is 61, and then this man is 28. Look at the diversity we're talking about when somebody has an opinion. But what I've discovered is by working with me, helping him to learn what it is to be a manager, to be on the leadership team. And I have come to admire him so much, and I have learned so much about how and why millennials think as they do. And he's more conceptual than the rest, any of them. So my point is, what we see is not necessarily, in fact, almost always, is not what is really there. I think every time I have a new client, I think of it as Christmas. I can hardly wait to open the package and see what's inside. And boy, was this a gift. This 28-year-old engineering manager is such a gift in my life.
That's fantastic. Let me remind our listeners again, for our guests just tuning in, this is Living Downstream on 99.7 KQUA. I'm your host, Julie Lowe, and we're speaking with Dr. Jean Erickson Walker, a communication and career coach, an educator, and a public speaker. We are discussing the fascinating world of communications and how communicating with each other and how it can all go so bad so quickly. Jean, you've mentioned a couple times about communication is tied to trust. You need to trust. I live in a community where we have learned not to trust each other because we have such diverse needs from our community. We're in the watershed. We have, you know, we have your environmentalists and we have your loggers, and we all love our watershed. We depend on it. We love it. We cherish it, but we have different goals, and they're all legit and they are all honest and they all can be met. But I feel like we've learned to distrust each other, that the other guy wants what we have. And if he gets what he wants, I can't have what I want. And it's more than what I want. It's what I need. And he says the same thing. So how do you, at this point, when we've grown a little bit to distrust each other, maybe a lot a bit, where do you go now? We have learned this distrust among each other.
Well, first of all, trust is the base. It's the foundation of everything in life. It doesn't matter what it is. If without trust, there is nothing. You have nowhere to go without trust. So, you know, in when you get in a situation where there's too much water under the bridge, literally, you know, that old saying,
right?
I mean, too much has happened, you know, so that we've lost trust. I think it's important to bring this fact up in the group that we can't go anywhere until we rebuild trust. So let's create our, whatever you want to call them, the rules of conversation, you know, the commandments of building trust. One is to never say something that you don't really believe, and you start with the silly things. How are you today? You start with people becoming aware of the things they say in their day. You know, your hair is lovely. It doesn't mean that you have to criticize somebody and say what you really believe. It means you could, you know, you don't always have to say exactly what you believe. First of all, assume that you aren't always right. And there may be varying opinions about that. So you don't have to feel compelled to say the cruel thing, the mean thing, the thing that is negative. So stop and take a breath. Go back to the rule of listen twice as much as you speak. A huge rule is to value the differences between extroverts and introverts and understand that introverts, quite frankly, in general, think much more deeply than extroverts. And the reason for that is that they are processing inside before they speak. In the meantime, the extroverts have each said 75 things, right? So by the time the introvert does say something, you know, it's lost in the shuffle. So if you are a group, always allocate 2 minutes to each person for an initial statement and follow-up statements. Create some rules of the road for the interactions. Do not let someone take over. You will often find that the person who's doing the most talking, obviously is doing the least listening, is probably doing the least processing of information, came full-born with their opinions, and has not changed an opinion in a very long time because they're so busy talking about that opinion. So there's a wonderful book I recommend to everybody who's working with groups, and the name of the book is Quiet, An Introvert in a World of Extroverts. It is an excellent book. And it really makes you stop and think and realize, you know, how much do I really know about that? Be aware of the person who uses data undefended, the person who throws out numbers which have absolutely no relevance, but it makes them sound very, obviously they're very intelligent and very bright because they remember the numbers. The numbers may have no relevance. So establish, say, 5 rules of the road, you know, that you do. If it's a formal grouping, be sure you have those rules. Don't let someone dominate it. And remember, what is the impact each person personally? How much skin do they have in the game? And if you don't have a lot of skin in the game, back off. Be that central point for other people where you can be listening and you can pull together, and you will notice as you're listening, you'll notice things that really work together well. You know, this is true for here and this is true for here. How can that work together? And so understanding, getting to know the person as a human being, find the things that you have in common that have nothing to do with the controversial issue. You know, I look back at those 1950s and 60s. How did we come out of that? I don't know how. I mean, but what we did is I think people got just exhausted emotionally. Just exhausted emotionally. When you live on a ranch, for example, you are so interdependent. You know, you think of those times when Tim Madison, you know, who had the ranch across from us, when he had an appendicitis attack, acute appendicitis at the beginning of harvest season. My father, as he always did, gathered all the neighbors together and they went over and took care of Tim's crops first. It just gives me goosebumps to think about that. But that was typical. That's how people lived there. It didn't matter, you know, what their opinions or things. And then there was a little more controversial issue because Tim's young wife became pregnant and was going to have a baby in the middle of the winter. My father went to town and bought a snowplow for in front of his truck so he could get Elaine into the hospital if necessary. My mother said, "Why, you know, we've needed a snowplow forever. How come you never got one for us?" So it was a little controversial. And he says, "Well, I'm just worried that we'd be able to get her in town time." You know, I mean, that's the kind of
right.
that supersedes all political beliefs. Those are the real issues. When did you last take someone with a completely opposing viewpoint politically out for coffee with the rule that you wouldn't talk about those issues? And you started asking about hobbies or things they enjoy or, you know, I always, one of my pet questions is, what were you doing when you were 5 years old that you were having so much fun you forgot to come home for dinner? You'd be surprised what you learn. You know, because you get back to, you talk about yourself, you keep growing and growing, and who am I really? Well, you're pretty much the person you were at five. In between, life has taken over, and you've gone in various directions. But bottom line, we're still 5 years old inside. Get to know the person, the five-year-old inside the person you're talking with. You have that to smile about. You have that to think about. You have that to, you know, well, if that person liked doing that at five, let's go do that.
Right.
Let's
right.
go wander through the woods. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I love that. What makes people defensive and not want to listen? I get that sometimes. They know I'm with Uncle Watershed, and some people have our number, I think, and they're ready to be defensive first. Well, how can I head that off the pass?
It's bottom line, it's one word: fear. Fear is the great divider in anything. I will be harmed. I will be hurt in some way by this person because of their viewpoints. Remember I said that when I give a speech, I was brought over to Prague, the Czech Republic, to give a keynote address to the International Association of Career Management Professionals. And it was, they were fascinating. These are people from all over in my field. It was absolutely fascinating. And you know what I discovered most of all? In our field, we had the same issues. We had the same issues. Didn't matter where we lived. Didn't matter. It didn't make any difference. They were the same issues. So find the things that unite me. They're much more interesting than the things that divide you. And when you meet with each other, don't immediately put up your defenses because that's a bad guy. That's a guy on the wrong side. And that person is going to harm me in some way. I have to stop that person. I have to conduct my own battle. I need to get out my own personal sword and shield. And I need to go to battle. That's what we have seen these last years. That look of fear and trauma and anger and trepidation in people's faces. And we're just beginning, I think, to see more smiling eyes. I don't trust, I'm not interested in somebody smiling with their mouth if they're not smiling with their eyes. I mean, it's not sincere.
This makes me laugh because, you know, I prepared for this interview and I wrote some, you know, classic stereotypical questions down. And one was, and now I'm a little bit ashamed of myself. How well do I need to know the other person to win an argument? Now, after hearing our conversation, I'm like, I approached it from the wrong way from the get-go.
Yep.
I don't need to know them well to win. But maybe I do need to know them well to understand and to learn. Tell me more about that.
I am just, my family would say I'm neurotic about learning and growing. I have to every day be learning and growing. Life is so curious. It's so fascinating. People are so curious and so fascinating. I wonder about if we would start focusing on learning and growing and understanding ourselves. When I was a child, my family were, you know, cultural values, and we can talk about that sometime. Cultural values are so fascinating, whether it's of your family, your community, or, you know, whatever it is. But a cultural value in my family was, how can you be helpful? And I used to tease that my father was a tall, blonde Norwegian, and a Lutheran it happened to be, and I referred to him as the local rabbi. Because my understanding in the Jewish religion is people come to the rabbi with all their concerns. And people came to my father with all their concerns. I mean, it could be marital, it could be a horse that broke a hoof, it could be a crop, it could be dealing with the banker, it could be dealing with a child who's sick or isn't doing well in school. It could be anything. And my mother took care of people. She had her routes. That, well, I haven't seen or heard from Florence for a while. I'm going to go check on Mary. And I was so much younger. I was five, you know, I was 10 years younger than my next sibling. And we would make cookies and go check on Florence or Mary and see if they were okay. We never said that we came to check on you. We just thought, we made some cookies. We thought we might come share them with you. But in the process, my mother would learn, are they okay? Is everything fine? And from the time I was tiny, you know, go ask Mrs. Brunsworth what you can do to help. And what I always thought as a child, there was only one sin that was absolutely the worst in the world. And when my mother said to me, you're just being selfish, I knew God was going to open up the earth. There would be thunder and lightning. I would fall through and never be seen again. We are such a self-focused, self-concerned, self-protective, defensive society now. It's an all about me. And my great hope is for the millennials. They remind me in many ways of the traditionalists, the people born before 1945. These millennials care. They care. They care about the environment. They care about each other. They are very close to each other. They are very non-competitive. Interesting. As a nation, we pride ourselves in being independent. That's a bunch of nonsense. But we pride ourselves in being, we're not at all independent because we're competitive. You can't be both. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm independent, I don't understand what other people do, what that has to do with me, because each of us is unique. And there's nothing more exciting to me than when someone achieves something. I'm riding my own train, and my train is going where it can be, where I can learn and grow, and where I can help others in any way I can. I am not young, which is hard for me to understand. I mean, that makes no sense, right? But I am not young yet, and I chuckle at myself because I just was on an airplane very recently, and this older woman who was probably in her 60s was a little befuddled about how to put her luggage up. So I took it out of her hands and put it up and explained to her how it worked and got her all settled. And then I sat down and chuckled at myself. But I just heard my mother say, well, Jean, what can you do to help? When we stop focusing on me and start focusing on you and us, it's not about me. It's about how can we together do wonderful, interesting, exciting things and learn and grow together.
Jean, this has been just fascinating. I'm going to ask you now if we can do this again sometime. I think we need to follow up on this. We're just getting started. This is my hour, but I would love to book you for another hour. I'd love to talk to you more and explore more about this. This has been fascinating. Thank you so much for your time.
I've loved being with you.
This has been an episode of Living Downstream, and I am your host, Julie Lowe. I've been speaking with Dr. Jean Erickson Walker. She's a communication and career coach, an educator, a public speaker. She's had a fascinating life and has taught me so much today. Thank you all. If you've dropped in late or missed any part of this interview or any interview in our series, you could find past episodes at umpquawatersheds.org. And thank you again for listening.